You've got enough on your plate. Mundane meals shouldn't be one of them. Get an endless variety of the freshest, best-tasting food from award-winning chefs delivered to your door with Cookunity, all at a fraction of the cost and time you're spending now. Cookunity offers hundreds of meals prepared by their roster of all-star chefs. Simply choose from their innovative variety or let them surprise you. Menus are updated weekly, and new chefs are always joining the team. So you'll have fun discovering new favorites while avoiding the dreaded dinner rut. No cleanup or meal planning. Just easy and effortless meals delivered fully cooked that heat up in as little as 5 minutes. Speaking of easy, Cookunity is flexible and commitment-free. Skip deliveries, pause, or cancel anytime. Take a load off and leave your meal prep to Cookunity. Affordable food crafted by award-winning chefs delivered straight to your door. Go to cookunity.com/podcast or enter code podcast before checkout for 50% off your first week.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 16. Hello everyone, and welcome back finally to the Season 16 debut of The Dark Paranormal. And you may think this has been a long break between seasons, but believe me, it's been much longer for me because I know what is to come down the pipe in this season content-wise. And I genuinely believe some of the experiences we will cover, you will not have heard the likes of before. And today we'll ease into Season 16, if you could call this experience easing in, with one of our listeners' experiences by the name of Ren. And it's one of my favourite type of experiences, one where we're kind of left guessing at the end just what could have been happening to Ren throughout her life, as she reveals her chronological experiences. And for Season 16, I've made a promise to myself to get to these experiences quicker, so I'm very quickly going to thank our wonderful team over at Patreon. When you sign up to our Patreon, not only will you receive every episode released on this feed, both early and ad-free, but you can also gain exclusive access to our Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. Dark Bites releases each and every Sunday of the year, even on the downtime between seasons, meaning not only did our Patreons receive episodes of Dark Bites during the season break, they also received this very episode, not on a Friday, but on the Wednesday before, and without adverts. But the best thing about our Patreon is genuinely its community. It's a team of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts who are not afraid to ask questions and hold healthy debate. Respect and acceptance are the keywords of our Patreon community. And no matter how outlandish you may believe your experience is, it will never be ridiculed on our Patreon. So if that sounds like a place that you think you could call home, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And of course, you can also gain full access to the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites, with well over 60 hours worth of experiences only heard by our Patreons for you to go and binge. Now, as long-time listeners will know, when we have a season break, we do occasionally have a backlog of names to read out to say thank you to. And again, that's the case. So if you don't hear your name this time, do not worry. We will get round to it, as we ensure we do each and every season. But right now, we want to say thank you to the newest members of our wonderful team over at Patreon. And they are Sue Banks, Colton Garrett, Tiana Percy, Lewis Berry, Landon DiPaolo, Emma Durham, Calliope Starr, Jeremy Stemmen, Karen Brett, Jade McDonald, Isaiah Ramirez, Shelby Coleman, Paddy Barco, Claire Johanna M, Lorna Monroe, Jade DeGuz, Benton Garnhardt, Darren Canning, Drake Alvarez, Hayden Ashley, Cole Bradfield, Lee Lane, Sherry McCulloch, Samara from the Ring, Craig Watt, Amber Jess, Yvette Padilla, Roxanne Brown, Samantha Hebel, Alistair Davies, Zach Richardson, Jenna Steen, Esmeralda Zagel, Quam Moore, Dathan Hawkins, Alyssa, Kaylin Holmes, Styx Malone, Crazy Oreo 131, Emma McQuillan, and Nikki McGuire. Thank you so much for the support, guys. It genuinely means the world. Now, we've built a wonderful community over at Patreon, and we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Now, I feel like I've waited forever to say the following word, but here we go. Lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable and, of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we listen to 25 Years of Darkness. My name is Ren, and that's my real name. Having said that, I will be changing the names of others involved. Just for context, I'm a woman now in my late 40s, and I was born and raised in London in the UK. But my parents migrated from southern India. I can't remember how old I was when I had my very first paranormal experience, but I know I was too young to articulate what I saw. We were living in East London, and it must have been around the late 70s, so I would probably say I was 3 or 4 years of age. The sun had just set, so it was not quite dark. I'm sure I probably should have been in bed, but I wasn't. I was in the living room, looking out of the window, as kids do sometimes, and I noticed what looked like a silhouette of a man running across the road. It looked like a man, at least I assumed it to be a man. But he was transparent. I now know this was a shadow person, but I obviously didn't know that at the time. And although he was running, there was no noise, no footsteps, just dead silence. And it was a strange kind of silence. Even at that young age, I felt like I'd seen something I wasn't supposed to. I tried to tell my mum what I'd seen, but I knew I wasn't making any sense, mainly because I didn't know what I'd seen. I think I literally said to mum, "Monster running!" And my mum said something like, "Oh, really?" having zero idea what I was on about. That was my first experience, and I never saw that shadow man again. From that point in my life continued without paranormal incident. Forward to 1996, and my sister was married to an awful man. A man who dedicated most of his time to harassing me. He would visit my home daily, under the guise of visiting my dad, but would make me very uncomfortable. For the sake of the tale, I'll call him Joe. And this would continue until I left the family home just before I turned 21 that same year, when I got married to a man called Dan. Dan and I had been seeing each other around 7 months when we got married. I told him about the problems I was having with Joe, and he suggested getting married, so that I could get out of the house. Back then, young Asian women didn't move out of the family home to live alone. You only moved out after marriage. So, when Dan asked me, I agreed. I know that's very selective of me, marrying someone because they asked, but my situation was such, and I just needed to get out of that house. So, against my family's approval and consent, I left home to be with Dan. My family and I did not speak from that point for about the next 3 years, mainly due to the influence that Joe had on my parents, turning them against me. I moved into Dan's home with his large family, and things were fine, until they weren't. About 6 months later, Dan became violent. This then became a regular part of my life. 2.5 years later, I found out I was expecting a baby, and I was over the moon. But Dan's behaviour only got worse. I had a little girl, who I'll refer to as Jasmine, and I was a good mum, and I knew I would always do my best to protect her. Very soon after Jasmine was born, I noticed that I would feel very uncomfortable when I was alone in that house. I didn't want to be at home by myself. I felt a presence in the house, like I needed to take me and my baby and get the hell out. I would be alone most days when everyone else was at work or college, so I had to find a way to deal with it. I soon found myself taking the baby and leaving the house after everyone had left. I didn't have anywhere to go, though, but I would just go out for long walks and go to coffee shops. I didn't for one moment think it was paranormal. I thought it was just my hormones. I just had a baby and I was sure there was all manner of up and downs going on in my body. In the early hours of June the 2nd, I was awoken by a terrible nightmare. I can't remember what it was about, but it frightened me enough to make me sit bolt upright in bed, and I stared at the clock, which read 1:30 a.m. The sash window was open, and it was windy, very windy. There was also thunder and lightning. So I got up and closed the window. But I noticed a heaviness in the air. Something was not right. It felt like something was in my room. I paused. I was scared for Jasmine. But again, I thought I was overthinking. So I checked on my baby, and I settled back and tried to get back to sleep. About 5 a.m. that morning, the phone rang. It was my sister, and I hadn't heard from anyone in the family since I left home, so I was surprised when I answered the phone. And she told me that Joe had died suddenly during the early hours of the morning, following heart surgery. His exact time of death? 1:30 a.m. Instantly, I knew it was Joe who I'd felt in the room when I'd woken up. I was in shock and felt quite violated to think that he could have been in my room. I was glad he was dead. I'm not going to dress it up. But did this mean he could follow me anywhere now? A month or so later, myself, Dan and Jasmine took a trip to Scotland. We drove quite far north and past some really remote places. It was starting to get late and darkness was creeping in. This was 1999, so we didn't have mobile phones and the internet was not as accessible as it is now. So when we went to places within the UK, we would just drive there, find a B&B somewhere. So that's what we were doing this time. It seems silly now, taking a chance like that, especially with a baby. But we came to a little place on the east coast of Sutherland. But we kept going because Dan wanted to get as far north as we could. But as there didn't seem to be any sign of civilization, I suggested that we go back to the little village we just passed, as we had the baby to consider. She was tired, and quite honestly, so was I. It was about 6 p.m, and we did find a little B&B where a woman, probably in her 60s, shown us two rooms. Of the two, we chose the bigger room, and I looked out of the window, and our car was right in front. I then noticed there was a cemetery across the road. It was quite beautiful and well looked after. The room was nice too. Family photos on the wall, wedding photos. One of the photos had five people stood together. But it was a strange picture, because there was a gap in between two of the people. Like there was a third person that had been erased out. I remember looking at that and thinking, what a strange way to take a picture. But I didn't think about it again. Later on, we went for dinner. We walked there as it wasn't too far, but the baby would not stop crying, so we didn't stay for too long. We had our meal, and we met some lovely people who chatted to us and recommended places to see. They even entertained Jasmine whilst the two of us quickly ate. But it was now quite late, and we started to walk back. It was 11 p.m, and I know this, as I heard the clock chime somewhere in the distance strike 11. I remember feeling extremely uncomfortable and anxious on that walk home. I kept turning around to check no one was behind us, but I genuinely felt like someone was following us all the way back to the B&B. Although it was late, it wasn't very dark, as it was the height of summer, and it stays a lot lighter at night in Scotland, especially compared to southern England. We got to our B&B and started to get ready for bed, and I realised that I'd left one of those bags containing Jasmine's clothes in the boot of the car. So Dan said he'd pop out and get it and left the room. I was holding Jasmine in my arms, rocking her back and forth because she was still crying. In fact, she was borderline inconsolable. I was rocking her, and I suddenly felt fear. A kind of fear I'd never felt before. It completely took me over, and within seconds, I was completely paralysed. I had, and still never have, experienced anything like that in my life. I was totally overcome with this feeling. It felt like something had entered my body, and I was no longer in control. I couldn't move a muscle. I was no longer rocking back and forth. I was catatonic. I was looking up at this hideous pink light shade on the ceiling, and my eyes were fixed. All I could do was tell myself that Dan would be back in a minute, and as soon as he gets back, we would get the hell out of here. Dan came back a minute or two later, but to me, it felt like an eternity. As soon as he came into the room, my paralysis wore off, and I could move again. But for some reason, I chose not to tell him what happened. Instead, I just got the baby dressed for bed, and I got into bed myself. I didn't put my daughter in the cot. I kept her with me in the bed. There was no way I was going to leave her, even for a second. And she didn't stop crying. Even I couldn't console her. Although I was no longer paralysed, I was still dealing with the effects of what had happened to me. I didn't speak again that night. I couldn't. I was still in shock. But I couldn't understand why I didn't tell Dan. I know I didn't have the most understanding of husbands, but it was not like me to keep something like this to myself. It felt out of character for me. Nothing else happened for the rest of the night, and in the morning, I got our stuff ready so we could leave as quickly as possible. As I was packing, I glanced at that photo on the wall, the one with the five people and the gap. But now there was no gap. There were six people in this picture. I couldn't figure out who was missing from the original picture, and I didn't want to hang around to investigate. I just wanted to drive away as far and as quickly as possible. Once we were in the car, Dan shared with me that he felt uncomfortable in the place too. That's probably why Jasmine didn't settle. She must have felt it too, he said, trying to scare me, wanting me to be frightened. But what he didn't know was, I was already terrified, more than he could possibly know. But I was surprised that he'd admitted feeling uneasy. He was not the most intuitive or sensitive of people, and he would normally just brush it off, make some cliched comment that would leave me questioning my sanity. But I was glad we left when we did, and the rest of the trip passed without incident. A year later, when my baby was a year and a half old, I plucked up the courage to pack my bags, and when everyone was out, I took my baby and I left that home. The situation at home had escalated, and I had nothing left in my arsenal. I found myself a small room above a pub, and I stayed there for a few weeks until I found somewhere to stay on a more permanent basis. The room was nice and cheap, and the landlady was nice too. One night, whilst I was asleep, my mobile rang at 2:30 a.m. I answered the phone, and I could hear what sounded like someone crying on the phone. They were also mumbling something, but I couldn't quite make that out. I thought it might be Dan, in my half-asleep state. I thought it had to be him. So I said, "Dan? Dan, is that you? Are you okay?" But there was never any response to my questions. I didn't know anyone who would make this sort of call. And these calls continued for several weeks, always between 2:30 and 3 a.m. And they were eerie. I felt like I was being watched. Rather tellingly, they would never happen if I was staying with friends. It was as if they were waiting until I was at my most vulnerable. But a few weeks later, the calls stopped as suddenly as they began. I eventually found a one-bedroom flat and moved out of the pub. I re-established contact with my family, and things were finally starting to look up. My little flat was great. It was not a purpose-built flat, but a Victorian house converted into flats. My flat was a strange one. I'm not sure what the technical term is, but if you imagine a row of Victorian houses with a gap in between two of them, and an apartment built in that gap, but not at ground level on the first floor, so you could drive under the flat to go and park at the back of the property. I hadn't stayed there very long when my sister asked if I would go and stay with her, as she was feeling a little lonely after Joe's passing. Well, I agreed, and my daughter and I went to stay at hers. One afternoon, I was coming down the stairs, and I could see into the kitchen, and I saw someone sitting at the dining table, and I recognised that someone. It was Joe. I ran down and rushed into the kitchen. Nothing. No one there. but I know I saw him. He was wearing a dark blue jumper with two white stripes on the cuffs. I'd seen him long enough to be able to notice that. But again, I put it down to my overactive imagination and tried to brush it off. Later the same day, we had some visitors round, and when they left, my sister went to the door to see them out and was chatting to them to say goodbye on the driveway, and I was still in the house, in the lounge in fact. And I thought I'd also go out and wave them off. So I stood up and headed towards the front door, for which I needed to pass the kitchen again. And there he was again. This time, he had his back to me, stood in front of the window, looking out at my sister and the guests as they left. I had a clear view of him this time, and he was wearing the same dark blue jumper with the white stripes on the cuffs. This time, I stayed there long enough to take a proper look. I hadn't imagined it. I was shocked, but I wasn't scared. I ran out to get my sister. I told her I'd seen something and grabbed her in. But when we came in, he was gone. My sister asked me what I'd seen. I didn't want to seem insensitive or upset her, but I told her, "Listen, I'm pretty sure I saw Joe." "What? No way," my sister unsurprisingly replied. "You must have imagined it." I then told her that I'd also seen him earlier that day, and he was wearing the same things. As I'd had no contact with them for 3 years, I wasn't privy to the contents of his wardrobe. But straight away, my sister told me that he did indeed have a jumper exactly like that. But I'd never seen it before, so I would have no way of knowing that. I also told her that when I seen him earlier in the day, he was sitting at the dining room table. I even pointed to the chair he was sat on. My sister then told me that apparently that was his favourite seat, and he would often sit there. We were both quite taken aback. It was at this point my sister told me something that I, quite frankly, could have lived my entire life not knowing. She told me that the very last thing Joe said to her was he wanted to see me. His last words were about me. My sister had refused, and apparently he pleaded with her. But she told him it wasn't going to happen. From that point on, there was a whole host of paranormal activity in that house. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns make it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, your retirement. You're probably thinking, "I need surplus money to invest," but you don't need a lot of money nor expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. And right now, Acorns is putting their money into your future. Open an Acorns Later IRA and get up to a 3% match on new contributions. That's extra money for your retirement. If you're anything like me, you always thought investing's what other people do. Other people who know what they're doing. Well, that's where Acorns come in. They do know what they're doing, on your behalf. And they're also putting their money where their mouth is, because as mentioned earlier, open an Acorns Later IRA and you'll get up to a 3% match on new contributions. So head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client testimonial. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorn.com/darkparanormal. Today's show is brought to you by Grundy's MD, MCT Wellness. And what MCTs, I hear you say? Well, an MCT is a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, it turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down excess fat in your body. And if people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Well, Dr. Grundy, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch, one that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out the excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate that caloric bypass at home. And it's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is specifically designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. All you do is add a scoop to water and enjoy it, and what's more, it tastes incredible. So you get to enjoy a delicious drink and then watch as you start to feel slimmer and more energized. So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to grundymd.com/darkparanormal and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular priced order, plus a 90-day money-back guarantee. So once more, that's grundymd.com/darkparanormal. Now let's have a quick break to talk to you about Policy Genius. It's September. It's back to school for many people. You start thinking of the year ahead. Will you get those work projects finished by the end of the year? And speaking of the end of the year, you have Thanksgiving, the holidays, they're all going to be upon us soon. Your brain is a whirlwind of plans, as it should be, because we're designed to survive by planning, but we don't plan that much when it comes to the end, i.e. when we're gone. It took me till last year to get life insurance for myself. And that's because life insurance felt a bit daunting, but Policy Genius makes this process a breeze. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. With Policy Genius's technology, you can compare quotes from America's top insurers in a few clicks and find your lowest price. And if you ever need help or guidance, they've an expert licensed support team to answer your questions, handle the paperwork, and advocate for you throughout the whole process. Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace for a reason. They don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, and their advice is unbiased. Everything else aside, the peace of mind you get from knowing your loved one's expenses are covered if anything happens to you is priceless. It's never too late to plan ahead, so head over to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see just how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. One night, around 3:30 a.m., my sister and I were sitting in the lounge. She was sat at the bureau, which was facing the wall, and I was sat on the sofa watching TV. And I saw a little girl come running into the room right past me. The large patio doors to the garden were behind the TV, so it was like she came in from the garden. She had two pigtails, or plaits, I'm not sure which. But we only had a lamp on, so the lighting in the room was not great. But it was enough to see this little girl and make out that she was fairly transparent, just like the shadow man that I saw as a child. But the little girl did have facial features and a dress. But I didn't see her for long enough to make any of that out. I just shouted at my sister, "Did you see that?" "See what?" my sister asked. "I just saw a little girl come running in from the garden. Please tell me you saw that." I was jumping up and down in the armchair. But my sister hadn't seen it. But she could tell from the look on my face, I had definitely seen something. We couldn't explain it and we were a little freaked out. So we decided to try to go to bed and put it out of our minds. The next morning, a letter came through the post. addressed to the previous owners, which was very strange, as my sister had lived in that house for 11 years at that point. So she opened the letter, and it was from a funeral home, asking if the previous owners wanted to organise a memorial on the anniversary of their child's death. Well, I was gobsmacked. I see the little ghost girl in the early hours of the morning, and a few hours later, there's a letter about the memorial for a dead child. It was all very strange. My sister's two children, an 8-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl, would also experience things. My niece would tell us how she could hear whispering in her room at night, so much so she struggled to sleep. She said she would go under the covers so that she didn't hear the whispering and try and get some sleep. We would often go out and come back home only to find the TV on in her room when she hadn't left it on. And this became a regular occurrence. My sister once found a handprint on her bedroom mirror. The only thing about this handprint is it wasn't like a normal human handprint. It had extremely long fingers. Too long for that of a human. But what could it be? There were only four of us in that house, and it most certainly did not belong to any of us. Looking at it made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. We also noticed that the metal door handles would start to become bent out of shape. None of us would be able to do that with our bare hands. And we certainly weren't sat there welding the door handles out of shape. Things just seemed to be happening on an almost daily basis. One day, the doorbell rang, so I went to see who it was. But there was no one there. It rang again and again, so I go to answer the door and I'm ready to start hurling abuse at whatever delinquent thinks this is a good prank. But again, there's no one there. It goes off a few more times, so I decide I'm going to catch them in the act. Now, the front door is a glass door with frosted glass, so you can totally see if someone is reaching for the bell or even stood on the step. The doorbell rings again, and as I'm stood there, I can see no one is there. I didn't even bother to open it. Skeptics amongst us may say the bell was malfunctioning, and maybe it was. But the bell is hardwired, and it's the same bell she has today, 24 years later, and it still works fine. I decided to go back to my little flat and forget about the goings-on at my sister's place, and for about 6 months I did. My sister did not have any other experiences either. Until I started to experience the strange activity in my own flat. I would often come home from work and find the bathroom taps turned on. This was pretty much daily. I thought I was forgetting to turn them off, but then I'd come home and not only would the taps be on, but the lights would be on too. And this went on day after day after day. Then I would wake in the morning and find specks of blood on my pillow. My first thought was I'd scratched my head somehow or maybe had a nosebleed, but no. No blood on my face or head or nose. I couldn't explain it. Sometimes in the height of summer, when it was 30 to 32 degrees, I would find myself putting the central heating on because my flat would be freezing cold. I'd also wake during the night to a foul smell. So much so, I'd find myself cleaning out my kitchen cupboards at 3 a.m. because the smell was so sickening, so fetid. I would also find that my front door would be locked using the key when I hadn't locked it. I'd noticed this first thing in the morning and in the middle of the day. I was completely exhausted, and a friend of mine who was a Christian told me that I needed to address this and that I should go to the local church and speak to the pastor. So I did just that. The pastor was a delightful man named Derek, and I explained everything to him. And he replied, "This sounds like typical poltergeist activity." Hearing that terrified me. At this point, I no longer felt safe having my daughter in that flat with me. I felt I was not able to keep her safe from whatever was in our home, so I sent her to stay with her grandparents. One day, a friend of mine, Mel, called me out of the blue and said that she'd left her partner and was in a relationship with someone else. She said they needed somewhere to stay temporarily and asked if they could stay with me. Well, I was just glad of the company, so said yes. And Mel and John turned up that very night. I loved having company, and I was grateful for them being there. I gave them my bedroom and I took the sofa. I wanted to make sure they were comfortable, so that I didn't have to be alone. I don't know how, but one day we got onto the topic of the flat being haunted. John said that he felt uncomfortable in the flat when he was alone, and that he could feel a presence. Mel said she couldn't feel a thing and was quite happy. The flat, being small, had a living room with a kitchenette, which is where we were sitting at the time of this conversation. Suddenly, a loaf of bread that had been sitting on the worktop was thrown across the room, landing in the living room. John turned to me and said, "Ren, why the hell are you staying here?" But the truth was, I had nowhere to go. My sister had met someone and had moved in, so they wouldn't be wanting me around. Her life was complicated already. Her kids were rebelling, and honestly, I didn't feel any safer there than I did here. My parents had also moved back to India as they were retired, so no, I had nowhere to go. I was completely alone. I knew that Mel and John's stay would only be for a few weeks, and then I would be left to deal with this thing again, alone. Well, Mel and John did leave, and I did feel so alone. I was talking to my neighbours across the road, and they told me about the man who lived in my flat before me. "Oh, Crazy Brian, yeah, I remember him. The walls are talking," he used to say. He mimicked in a funny voice, with eyes gesturing and waving his hands as he regaled the tale of Crazy Brian. I'd heard people mention Crazy Brian before, but I didn't know the full story. They assumed he was crazy, but I'm not sure he was. Not if he was going through what I was going through. You have to be careful with what you share with people about the paranormal, or you end up being Crazy Brian, or even Crazy Ren. Well, I didn't want people to talk about me like that, especially years from now. So I didn't say a thing to anyone. I started to become withdrawn and alone. I would go for days and days without seeing or speaking to anyone. This flat had me in its grip. It was keeping me inside alone. I didn't want to see or speak to anyone anymore. One morning, I was in my bedroom putting on makeup in the mirror, and behind me, I saw a woman in a white dress. I didn't catch her long enough for details, but it could have been a nightdress. That's the impression I got. She had blonde or light brown hair and was quite young, I think. Maybe her 20s or early 30s. I can't be sure, as she literally drifted in and then out of my room. But I definitely got the sense she was not of this era. I was quite friendly with the lady from the flat downstairs, and I knew she was not one to start a crazy Wren story. So one day I popped down, and I wanted to find if she'd had any experiences, and I mentioned to her that I'd seen an apparition of a lady in my flat. I was a bit worried she might laugh, or think I was not quite the full shilling. It's not the easiest of conversations to strike up. But she responded by saying, "Yeah, I've seen her too." I was relieved that it wasn't just me, but at the same time, terrified at the thought, I could no longer console myself by saying it was all in my imagination. I told my sister what was happening at the flat, but I just don't think she wanted to believe me. Mainly because that would mean supporting me, giving me somewhere to stay. And she was so preoccupied with her current love life, she decided to go down the "you're just lonely, find yourself a nice man" route. One Sunday, after going out with one of my friends, I came home around 5 p.m. and I opened the bathroom door. And as usual, the taps are running. I still had my hand on the bathroom door handle, and as I saw the running water, I said, "Oh God, not again." The bathroom door slammed shut, with me still holding the handle. Something had pushed me out of my own bathroom, and I was not going to hang around to find out what. I picked up my coat, my bag, and went to my sister's place. I crashed there on the sofa for the next 3 days. I eventually plucked up the courage to go back to the flat. I think by this point, my sister could see how I was being affected, and she knew I was struggling. I was tired and it was visible on my face. It was visible I just couldn't do it anymore, so I started to find another place to live. I was not having much luck finding a flat. I was on my own, and everything was so expensive. One Sunday, my sister and I went to Kensington for the day. I said to her, "I turned the lights out before I left, and I'm telling you that now because I need you to know I'm not going out of my mind." I wanted to be clear on that, because I didn't want to go back and find the lights on and then start questioning and doubting myself, because that was the road I was going down. I can't be believed, not even by myself. We had a nice day, and around 10:30 p.m, she dropped me back at the flat. As we pulled up to the flat, we looked up, and we both saw that the lights in the lounge of my flat were on again. We looked at each other, and she said, "If anything happens, call me." And with that, I got out of the car. I didn't have my own car at this point, so I felt trapped in my situation. I went inside and I sat on the sofa. I put the TV on and ended up falling asleep watching some rubbish on the TV. Around 1:30 a.m, I was awoken by a crash, and one by one the pictures that had been on my living room wall all came down. Those pictures had been up there for the past 4 years, and there was no reason for them all to come down at the same time. I was petrified. I tried my best to tell myself there must be a reason. I wasn't sure what, but I didn't want to stick around to find out. I'd hit my limit. I reached for the landline. For some reason, the phone just wouldn't work, although I could hazard a guess why. But it had no dial tone. The phone was working earlier in the day, but now it was dead. So I grab my mobile and I call my sister. When she answered, the first thing she said was, "Shall I come and get you?" There was no "hi" or "hello." She knew something was wrong, just by the simple fact I was calling her at that hour. That was the last time I would ever stay at that flat. I stayed with my sister for a few weeks, and then found a nice little two-bed house, about 20 minutes away. It was a nice little place, but I still had to go back to the flat to pack my stuff, and no way was I going alone. So my sister and a friend of ours came with me, and we packed everything up as quickly as we could, dumping my life into black bin liners. None of us wanted to be in there, and we got ready to leave that flat. I said out loud, "You can have your bloody flat back." No sooner had I said that than the lights in the lounge started flickering angrily in response to my comment. Well, we were all rather eager to be the first out of the door. After 4 years of mentally and emotionally being drained, I'd left that flat and I was in a lovely little house. And I was free of the haunting, at last. I was living in the new place for about a year or so, and everything had been fine. One day I sent a friend of mine up to the loft to check out what it was like. I don't really have a head for heights, and I also didn't want to run the risk of getting any spiders in my hair. He went into the loft and came down with a little clay pot. I opened the pot, and something quite sand-like fell out. I couldn't figure out what it was at first, and then I realised it was somebody's ashes. I didn't know why they'd been left up there or what I was supposed to do with them now, so I asked my friend to put it back wherever he found it. One evening, after having a bath, I was sat in the lounge still wearing my towel on my head, watching TV. As it was a small house, the staircase leading up was in the lounge, just behind and to the left of where the sofa was. As I sat there, I suddenly started hearing somebody running down the stairs. I was scared stiff and I jumped up and moved out of the way so that when this person comes into the lounge, which they inevitably will, it will buy me a few seconds to hide, or hopefully they'll leave without seeing me or wanting to hurt me. I waited for the intruder to come into the lounge, but when the footsteps got to the bottom step, it stopped. Nobody came into the lounge. There was no intruder. My legs had turned to jelly at this point, and I could feel the adrenaline coursing through my entire body. I couldn't explain what had just happened. I heard somebody running down the stairs. Bang, 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 bang. That's what I heard. I tried to rationalize it, but I just couldn't. I suddenly had the realization that I must have stirred up something when I found those ashes. Fast forward to the present day, and I'm now remarried, and I live in a lovely house with my husband Ian and my daughter Jasmine. Things still continue to happen, and we've moved many times. The houses change, but the events don't. One evening, I'm at home alone, after returning from work, and I'm cooking dinner. I hear Ian arrive, and the front door opens and closes. I hear him go upstairs, unusual as he would normally come and say hi. About 5 minutes later, I shout up to say, "Dinner's ready," but no answer, because he wasn't there. A few moments later, he arrived home. I ask, "Have you just popped out? Have you been back?" To which he responds, "No, I've just come home now." On another occasion, it was around 6 a.m. My husband had left for work and I was awake, contemplating my day ahead, and then decided to get out of bed and make myself a coffee. I turned down the duvet so I could get out of bed, and as I brought my arm back up, the duvet came back over me. Now, I should stress, I wasn't holding on to the duvet, nor did I have any jewellery on that it could have caught on. I literally lay there stunned for about 15 minutes, trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Can I debunk this in any way? I tried really hard, but no, I couldn't. I didn't pull the duvet back over me, and I can quite categorically say that. There were a whole host of things happening in the house after that. We'd hear teaspoons being moved in the kitchen. We'd all have nightmares about people we didn't know being killed. I can still see their faces quite clearly. Like I'm caught in a moment in time. There'd be incredibly loud bangs where you can feel the vibration, like something heavy has been dropped. We'd go up to investigate, but there's nothing there, nothing out of place. How was this becoming the new norm? One night I was sleeping in my daughter's room while she was away, and I could hear someone walking by the foot of the bed, like someone barefoot. But I could also feel the vibration, and in turn I hear the perfume bottles on my daughter's dressing table gently hitting each other. Another night, whilst my husband and I were asleep, we were both woken around 1 a.m. by a very loud bang, like a door slamming shut. We both heard it, and we both said it sounded like a door being shut. My husband went round the entire house and couldn't find a single door that had been closed. I would also often hear the doors of my built-in wardrobe, in my room, rattling around 2 a.m, and this would petrify me. I would lay there frozen with fear until I somehow fell asleep. We did find out that the land that building was built on was a former orphanage, and there was an awful lot of history there. We eventually moved from there and bought another property, but the next place also had issues. There's an interesting area on the stairs that has this very bizarre feeling. I thought it was just me that felt it, but several other people have mentioned it too. This is the area I would feel the most uncomfortable, and I would often find my cat staring up at the space. When we finally decided to sell the house a few years later, the estate agent put a little video on so you can view it online. I showed this to someone I work with, who happens to be a psychic. I hadn't mentioned a thing to her. I just showed her the video. As she was looking to purchase a property at the time, she watched the video and stopped and said she felt drawn to the upstairs. She moved the video around so she could see the landing outside my room and said, "There's a portal here. But you probably know that." That validated a lot of what was going on in that particular property at least, but not the other places. I've moved from that house, and although things are better, they never stay that way. I've moved many times since the start of all this, but it always eventually finds me. I'm going to stop here, Kev, as there are still things that happen, and I could tell you about. I think there always will be. As I mentioned at the beginning of my story, I don't know why I suddenly started feeling all of this as soon as my daughter was born. Is it that I've been followed by the same entity for the past 25 years? Or am I psychic in some way, and therefore more susceptible? Or maybe it's something else entirely? All the best, Ren. Well, Ren, thank you so very much for both your submission and being the debut episode of Season 16 of The Dark Paranormal. I do believe it's possibly our largest debut episode yet. And although I never claim to be an expert on these matters, and even though I've read the entire thing several times, for me the freakier part of the story, or narrative if you will, is Joe. is this guy, the guy who wanted to see you at the moment of his death. I personally think he has got a lot to answer for in your further hauntings, but that's just my opinion. But I'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining me for the debut episode for season 16. I'll speak to you all again on Wednesday for our first dark mini-sode of the season. Of course, our Patreons will get that on Monday, and our Patreons will also hear me next on Dark Bites on Sunday. And of course, you have a special invite to join our all-encompassing community by going to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Don't forget, if you have your own paranormal experience that may make this show a mini-sode or add to an edition of Dark Bites, email over to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. And in the meantime, remember, when you're talking about the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.